हरिः
ॐ
सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यन्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। Okay, so continuous Satkriya Sardipika on the Adivas. So we're on the last few items. So Chamara. The wind, the mind, the all-knowing Gandharva, the 27 constellations gather before you and offer homage unto you. So then this aspect of that we see with, how the control of the universe, right? The wind, then Krishna says he's the wind and it's also the purifier. He's the mind, the all-knowing Gandharva, that aspect of how one is all, pervading all things. The 27 constellations, they control the moon, so they control the mind like that. That's what their influence is. But they all, even though they all have that power, they're all coming before Krishna to offer their respects. So that potency that they have is actually coming from Krishna. So Krishna is the one who is the potency of all these elements that are there, right? So yeah. Then sandalwood. You are the Supreme Lord. You are one without a second. You are the object of all offerings and the instrument of all activities. You are the supreme ruler, the most famous, the most auspicious and pure. So then he's the essence, like sandalwood would be the essence, it's the essence of the scent and all that. And so then Krishna, he's the essence of everything because he's the only one that everything is expanding from and he's pervading everything. And others, have being empowered by the Lord in these features, then they're very active in performing their element, their particular duties, but they're not the source of this. That's the whole thing. Shiva may be doing so many things, Maya may be doing so many things, but they're not the source of these elements. Krishna is the source of them. So that's the point. He's one without a second. There isn't anybody that is like him. There isn't anybody who's equal with him. There's no one who's great. He's just, that's the thing. He's the unique person. And then from him, because of his personal position, then everything else then we see in the cosmos takes on this personal element, right? Because if you take a part of him, then you get he's conscious, so it's conscious. It's Satchidananda, he's Satchidananda, it's Satchidananda. So it has that same element to it. Then having done each of these items individually, where then as they've been touched to the pot or to the deity's feet, then the pot, then to the Yajaman's head, then to the earth, and then they're kept on a tray, very large tray that all these things can be accommodated. So it needs to be big. You can't use a regular arching tray. You need something that's very big. 90 centimeters, like that kind of thing, or 36 inch kind of plate. Then now picking up that plate, then all those items together, then again they're offered and the same thing's done. So the mantra for that, you are the beginning. I approach you to commence this rite. You are the activity in progress. For continuity, the act of the activity, I approach you. You are the completion of the activity. For success, I approach you. Right. So because he's the beginning, in other words, he's the situation, he's everything. So to even commence anything, to be able to use anything, to understand anything, what's the relationship? How does it work? Everything like that. Then that is all, what do you call it? That is Krishna. So he approaches, you approach Krishna. We approach Krishna to have that proper understanding, that sambandhi jnana, and then to be able to start something. Then because he's the activity that we want to do, he's the activity in progress, we approach him for being able to perform and continue the activity. And because he's the result of everything, then we are approaching him that we may be successful in this activity. So in other words, him being sambandhabhideyam prayojana, the beginning, middle, and end, we approach him for all these elements. Because without him, these things don't function. That nothing functions without him. That's the important point. He is the primary element, and everything expanding from him then constitutes what will be the secondary elements. So engaging those secondary elements in the service of the Lord, then it takes on the same nature, like iron and fire. So then it becomes prime. It becomes, gives the effect of primary, even though it may be through a secondary feature, right? So we have to appreciate that this is all coming from him. It's not separate from him. He doesn't have a separate identity from the identity of him. It's not that, okay, well, this is the spiritual stuff. We do it in one way. We go to the temple and then, you know, we do all this stuff there and we know all these things and we do them all nicely. But as soon as we walk out of the door and go out for some other activity or go to our house or whatever it is, then we're dealing in the practical world, a different thing altogether. And so everything's different. No, that's an illusion. Because the potency that makes anything work, you want to walk out the door. That's still Krishna, because Krishna is the door. He is the floor. He is your ability, you know, to be able to move. He is the context that you can actually get through a door. Like this, you know, you want to be able to continue through and continue that process of walking. And that's potency of him, of locomotion is him. You want to accomplish something from that walking. Then that also, the accomplishment is him. And so all that is still him. So one is becomes fully conscious of him at all stages. Right? Then after that, then the tray of articles should be given to the Yajaman to touch. Right? So then after it's brought to him, you know, so you show it to the, like that. So in this last one, you just show, you can't touch it anymore. Show to the pot, to, you know, the deities, the pot, Yajaman, to the earth, and then the Yajaman is touching, and then Haribo, right? Or you're showing it to the Yajaman, he touches then to the earth, and then it can be taken wherever it will be taken, right? And so in here we see is that all these different elements that are there, all these different verses, you're dealing with the principles we mentioned, is the poetics, the Vedic poetics here. Then you have, you know, what we do in the classical, what we call kavya. So that will have the elements where words will have, you know, some rhyme to them, you know, have some kind of alliteration. There's similar syllables that are going on that give a particular sound. You're putting them in a nice order that it brings out the meaning and the moods and everything like that. And, you know, so many different varieties of ways that the kavya then brings out the mood, the emotion, since the communication is about understanding and appreciating and experiencing and, you know, having, you know, knowledge and all these things, then you're bringing out that aspect of that emotional and all those kind of things like that. So because of something you value or something that you can identify with, or it gives you a feeling, that then becomes concrete. So the idea of kavya is to make things more concrete. Because as they are, that's abstract. You know, so we'll say, oh, that's scientific, it's objective. And then when in yourself, it becomes important to you, then they'll say it's subjective. But they're making the subjectivity sound like it's less important. But actually, it's more important, because that is then what you then will see as important value. So that's the difficulty, is that for actual life, then it's going to be about the experiential element to it. And then for the other, you know, the They call it the scientific, but it's actually just mechanical. It's mechanistic. It's not actually the proper definition of science. You know, they've taken a proper word and applied it to mechanistic, because mechanistic doesn't sound so good. Because if it's between mechanistic and personal and, you know, experiential and accessible, then mechanistic's not going to sound as good. But because these scientists are very proud of their intellect, which most people don't have in that area, so they want to make themselves superior. Of course, when it comes down to, you know, just being able to socially tell what others are thinking or saying in that, much of the time very absorbed scientists, you know, mechanistic scientists can't understand. So they're completely ignorant when it comes to the social and all that. But they'll consider their area superior because it's working with intelligence. So in that way, yes, they can. You can give some Shastic background, but that is superior. But they can't. They can't prove that intelligence is higher than the mind. They don't have the access. They don't have the knowledge to base it on. They're just saying that is, because if that's there, then consciousness is higher again, and that they don't acknowledge. They say there is consciousness, but that the individual living entity being consciousness is separate from the body. There's the supreme consciousness, so there's the intelligent design, all these things they reject. So that's the problem, is that they've only, you could say is no, but they're going for that higher, but only that higher because they're on that platform. And like that. So in any case, so it's mechanistic. So it loses all the elements of the kavya and all that. Well, then in the kavya, it still has to be able to express something that's real and valuable. And so in expressing what's real and valuable, then that's the whole point of the Vedic. It's still in context of the philosophy. So that's science. Science is you have the theory, the original theory, and then taking that theory, you apply it through the art, and then that's called science. So they're thinking, we have the theory, we're superior. And the artists are saying, well, we are able to practically apply it, we're superior. But the point is what's superior is when the both are together. So that's why the concept of the Vedic is that the kavya is actually explaining something and making it real to you, because making it real to you, then it has a value. Mechanistic is not of value unless you use it. That's the problem you see with the scientists. They come up with these things and they're happy just on that level, but it doesn't actually come to light unless somebody practical takes it and uses it on some variety of, you know, governmental or economic or social platform, then only becomes useful. Otherwise, yeah, there's so many things that you could do. You could take a rock, this rock, you know, in mechanism by applying a certain amount of force, it could go flying. So that means you could throw it in 360-degree direction, and also, you know, you have, you know, up and down. So all these things you could do with that, but unless you do something, what's the point? Yeah, you could do so many things, you know. You could go over and pull the chair out from under somebody before they sit down, or you could only half pull it out. Or you could pull it out, spin it around, and put it back before they actually fall on the floor. You know, or they could fall on the floor and then put the chair on top of them. Or, you know, so many things you could do. But what's the point? The point is only what's actually valuable for human life. So since consciousness is the highest, therefore, what knowledge and action is valuable to the consciousness, that's what's important. And then of the consciousness, what's elevating consciousness. And then of that, what is in contact with the absolute consciousness. And then of that, what is actually in a relationship with the absolute consciousness based on affection. Right? So there's so much more to go with these things. So we see the Vedic Kavya, then it will do, I mean, yeah, it means the Vedic literatures and the Kavya itself then is so much more important, because it's about the Lord and the devotees and their relationships and everything like that. And then you can apply it down on the more mundane levels and all that. So the Vedic verses themselves then also have the element of Kavya to it, but It's not in that so much as that aspect of the mind. It's more on the intellectual level, in that it's explaining all these different things of philosophy and all these aspects. And what's the common point is that there'll be a word in it, in the verse, that is makes it its choice. Because in any case, whatever it is, you know, like this in here, the last word of sandhood, om anena chandanena shubha divashaha astu, like that. So you can take the chandan to mean sandalwood paste, but the point is what's the glory of the sandalwood paste is that it's the Lord's uniqueness of being one without a second. That's the actual point. And then that also, in its own way, it applies to the sandalwood. So in the Vedic, in the Vedangas, then in the aspect of Nirukta, or what we call the dictionary aspect or etymology, then its point that it brings out is what is the obscure meaning to the verse, like that. And so looking for those more indirect elements, means the more obscure elements, but directly apply, you know. So in other words, you're looking for that direct. Abhida means it's the direct practical application, right? And lakshana will mean which elements don't actually, it's not direct, because it's so poetic, you can't directly apply it. You have to, it's just giving a flavor of, you know, an idea. And so you have to make it practical, you know, like the example of, the cowherds on the Ganga. What it means is they're on the bank of the Ganga. It doesn't mean they're in the water, right? But then you say you're on by coming to the bank. If you're some distance back, then you're not. But when you come right up to the bank, then you could say you're on the Ganga. You know, like you see in English, it'll say, you know, like say, you know, it's whatever it is, it'll be a city on a river. Everyone knows it's not on the river. It's on the bank of the river, but you call it on the river, right? You know, or on the ocean, or like this, you know. So then in that, then it's not speculative, in that these potencies and all that are coming from the Lord, and everything in the Veda is only describing the Lord. But at the same time, as the Lord's expanded of everything, these other things also then have their existence and their uniqueness, but they're still functioning on the potencies of the Lord. Everything's just functioning on the potencies of the Lord. So the more glorious it is, more auspicious it is, the more, you know, greater the qualities, then the more it's closer and represents the Lord in his natural form. And then the farther away it gets, then the less it's representing. It's still the potency is coming from the Lord, but you don't bring out the qualities of that as the important element. Does that make sense? So that's why you have all these uniquenesses in these verses. And one may wonder, well, what do they have to do with the sandalwood, or if it's you know, like that, or if it's a why it's talking about, if it's talking about Santa, why isn't it about the Lord? So that's why you see, depending upon the knowledge of the person translating, they may bring it out more in context of the Lord, or more in context of the item that the Lord's potency has expanded within. Right? But they're going to be connected. Yes? No? Very good. Okay. Then next, in the Adivas, then, a 4-wick, 5-wick, 7-wick, or similar lamp should now be offered, shown first to the deity, then the god, then the earth, and finally to the beneficiaries of the rite. Right? So then, okay, so here gives the order. Deity, god, earth, and then the yajaman. So if there's no deity, then god, earth, and the yajaman. Like that. The performance of Nandi Mukha Shraddha is not performed by Vaishnavas, as one may commit an offense to the holy name by worshipping the forefathers. Therefore, this ceremony is replaced by worship of the Guru Parampara and the offering of Mahaprasadam, Sattvika Vridhi Shraddha. Footnote 1. First one should worship Guru Gauranga and Vasudeva, then with the shot of flowers, chandana, etc., worship Guru Parampara, and give dakshina to Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. After that, offer Boga and Maha Arti. Then should offer Mahaprasadam to Guru and the Vaishnavas. Right? So we see there's very important points are being made here that aren't being necessarily always understood. Is that we see here in performing Sattvika Vridhi Shraddha. In other words, so since you're supposed to worship the forefathers, then we're going to worship the Parampara. Right? To approach the Parampara, you have to worship Guru. Right? Like that. So then we're offering them the remnants of sacrifice, because when you're worshiping the Pitris, then you're worshiping them, the remnants from Vasudev. Right? You go to Gaya, then you have the footprints of the Lord, so the offering there, that's then given. Right? So here, then you're worshiping Guru, Gauranga, and Vasudev, and then with the remnants of that, you worship the Guru Parampara. Right? Then you're going to give dakshina to Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. After that, offer Boga and Maha Arti. Right? Then one should offer Mahaprasadam to Guru and Vaishnavas. Right? So we see here is we've already worshipped Guru, you know, technically, and we've also worshipped the Vaishnavas. So why is it we're worshipping again at the end? Because the one is that you're worshiping the Lord, but you can only approach him through the Vaishnavas. So that worship there of worshiping the Vaishnavas and Guru and everything is part of approaching the Lord, right? And then after you're worshiping Parampara and then giving dakshina to Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. So you can say, okay, you're giving to Lord Vishnu and that, but why the Vaishnavas? So because they're part of the scene, because the Lord and then the devotees, that goes together, because Bhagavan means he's with the devotees. So then they're part of that element there. But this is still part of that worship. Right? And then having done that, now the Boga and the Maha Arti is offered and everything like that. Okay? Then after that, then you see is now you're offering the Mahaprasad to Guru and the Vaishnavas. So now it comes down to thou now having offered everything and all that and worship, now we're getting the remnants. Right? And now this is coming to the Vaishnavas. So it's very important to understand at which place in the worship these different points come. Because you can say, oh, we've already worshipped there, so it's already done. So when we worship Guru, then we offer to him, he eats it. No. That's why some foolish persons then came up with the ideas, oh, you can't worship. If I offer the lamp, I'm offering Artik. If I offer it to Guru, then he's already accepted it. Now it becomes prashad. And so now how can I offer it to the other acharyas and that? So I just pick up the lamp and just show it to Krishna. It is completely bogus understanding. Right? And at the same time, a misunderstanding. Because they don't understand this. When you're there, you're approaching the Lord, but it's only through the Vaishnavas. You have no right to offer a lamp to Krishna. Who are you? Why would you be there offering the lamp to Krishna? There's unlimited living entities. Why you? But no, you're worshiping, you're an assistant to your guru. He has the position. Then to his guru like that, back to Krishna. Now there's a connection. And then you worship Krishna himself, but he also includes his devotees in expansion. So therefore, that's why then on the altar, you're offering the arti. After Krishna, then to Radha, and everybody else is there, and then to, you know, Nrisingadev and Tulsi and the Parampara, and then also the general Vaishnavas that have come to see the arti. That's all part of the Lord and his expansions. Only after that, now it's finished. So now you can take whatever it is, that those flowers and all that, and offer them to the Lord. Put them on his lotus feet if you want. Put them on the deities. But some will say, no, you have to take them off and then show, because you can't show. These are neophyte understandings. And they're not accepted by the Pancharatra. This is their own made-up concept of worship. Their own made-up. Like that. But because it's mundane, that's why it catches on. You can see anything spiritual, it takes you forever to try to get it established that this is right. But as soon as something mundane is introduced from my brain, not from what is the traditional with the understanding, that first time it's used, everybody understands. And if from that moment, you then start to travel around the world, temple to temple, you'll see by the time you get to that temple's already doing it. And even though you explain to them that this isn't the real thing, that this is what it is, like that, you come back next year, they'll still be doing it. Because the people that were sitting in the class understood it, but the other people that didn't, you know, that were there, just only visit the temple on the, you know, festival time, now they're doing it, you know, cat in the basket. So it's very important to understand this as deity worship is part of the paravidya. It's based on directly the philosophy. And we can't misapply this philosophy, right? We can't misapply how religion works because it's Krishna. It comes from him. It's his potency. So at what level are you worshiping? Because you're saying, oh, we can't offer it to him personally because it's an offense. But the point is him as a person only has meaning when everyone is there. If you say Braja Krishna, what's the meaning if he's sitting in a cloud with an Om sign? It's because he's sitting with Mother Jashoda, he's sitting with the gopis, he's sitting with everybody. That's what makes it. Right? So it's very important to be able to understand that as we get into it, we'll see this principle, because the same, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, the approach, or, you know, like that, the application, and the result, the ending. So there's always beginning, middle, and end of an action. Right? Even you're dealing with the transcendental, there's Krishna playing the flute and calling the gopis. Right? Then there's going to be the rasa dance, and then there's going to be after the rasa dance, the activities. Right? But we see even within that calling, Krishna calling, he's going to be playing the flute themselves. Then they're going to be making arrangements to go. Then they're going to be going to the place where Krishna is. And then they're going to be arriving at that place. So even you have Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana within that element of just Madan Mohan, of his attracting the gopis, the preliminary. Then in the rasa dance, you're going to see then the rasa dance begins, but you're going to have the preliminaries. They start the rasa dance, but the mentality is not right. Right? They think that they're you know, the most fortunate, special, but they're not understanding Radharani's position. That they're feeling the most special because they're with Krishna. Nice, but they're proud of their position and they're not submissive to the mood that Srimati Radharani is trying to establish. Therefore, Krishna leaves with Radharani. That's the middle part. Then we have, you know, then you have that part where then they're going to, then, you know, go looking for Krishna and all those different aspects like that. And then, you know, they finally find Krishna and everything. Now they can have the rasa dance. So you could even say that's all within the Sambandha aspect of the Sambandha Abhideya, within the Sambandha aspect of Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana within Abhideya. You know what I'm saying? Because it just keeps going and going and going. So only then they have the Maharas. Because now Radha and Krishna are in the center and everybody else is dancing in circles around them. Now it's working because they all respect Radharani as the supreme gopi. Right? Like that. Then after that, then they're going to go do other activities. They're going to go and do the activities of walking around or playing in the Jamuna or eating something or doing all these different aspects like that, then they're all going to go to sleep. So these are all, you always see there's a preliminaries, there's the main action, and then there is the ending. And within that, the preliminaries have an order of getting all the things and starting to set it up and then actually having it set up, then it's done. Then starting the activity, it moving into the actual main thing, and then it'll have, you know, you're finishing that. Then there's going to be concluding activities, you know, taking care of, you know, all the expansions of the Lord, the associates of the Lord, all the different aspects and prayers and our surrender to the Lord, our relationship, all these things are going to be contained. So we're going to see is this element is essential to understand in the deity worship. Then everything makes sense, because when we go into it, we're going to go into the every ceremony, every samskar is going to have the setting up and all that, you know, the main part, and then the concluding activities, right? And with the yajna itself, it's going to have the kushandika, which is all the preliminary things to approach the Lord and all that. Then you're going to have the main yajna, and then you're going to have the Aditya Karma, that's going to be, you know, like Vaishnav Homa and worshiping the devotees and all that to close. Then the yajna is finished. So the yajna itself has those three parts. And then the yajna being the main thing in this thing, and what those ceremonies go on there, then what's before that will be the preliminary of that. And then what you do after that, like serving the Vaishnavs, you know, prasad and all those things, that's going to be the concluding. So there's always going to be beginning, middle, and end, because it's Krishna. So unless one sees like that, one will never actually fully understand, at least technically, how deity worship works. If you're doing whatever you're doing, your devotion to Krishna, then that's good. Krishna will be pleased. But understanding what you're doing, teaching it to others, you know, being able to expand and refine what you're doing, in other words, these supporting activities won't happen. Right. So this is where the confusion comes up, is that people make up these things. Like I said there, people make up ideas of how things work, how the deity worship works, by not understanding beginning, middle, and end. And so, yeah, or the sabbada abhidaya and prayojana. And so then they come up with that. And you see most temples as it is, they're offering the flowers, they just pick them up, you know, offer and that. Then they start coming down and takes them off to Krishna, then Radha takes them off like that, and, you know, like that, like, takes them off like that, and then come down and Parampara, and Prabhupada takes them off, and then, you know, one, you know, half-dried, you know, withered leaf and all that, they'll show to the Vaishnavas reluctantly like that, and then, you know, put that out. They don't understand this. No, until you've offered all those flowers to the Lord and his associates and those who have come to take part in it, the artik's not finished. And only when it's finished, now you can offer it to the Lord. So now you can take the whole plate as it is and throw it onto the altar. And those that disagree do not know what deity worship is. And this is one of those very grumpy statements that I don't care who it is, they don't know. Because this was never there before, practiced by any Vaishnavas. It's not given in the scriptures, but some devotee who studied, strangely enough, from the Sri Vaishnavas and misunderstood what they were doing, then applied this within the society. And because it's mundane, everybody caught it. But you explain the spiritual as well, you know, but isn't it because you showed? Yeah. You know, I walked by with the prasad. You saw it. So was that, it's done. I don't have to serve it out. Right? Isn't it? You saw it. You thought, oh, wow, nice prasad. I said, prasad's ready. I brought it out. I don't have to serve. So the subtle, by showing it that this is the offering for the Lord, I am offering it? No, I'm assisting the guru in the offering. Therefore, I give it to him. He gives it to his guru. He gives till finally it gets up where it's offered to Krishna. So this whole thing, I'm offering the artik, it's just false ego. No, I'm the assistant, the spiritual master. Prabhupada said, we'll see it coming up in the deity worship, that when you're an asan is there for the spiritual master. So when you have the table and the plate and you put down the asan, that asan's for the guru to make the offering. We're simply assisting them making the offering. Right? You want you can say, no, those are the deities. It says, then where's the guru sitting? Who's offering it to the deities? Because you're not. Krishna going to accept it because you offered it? Who are you? oh, how can you be so like this? You know, I just wanted to do something for Krishna, and I'm the center of the universe, and I'm the victim of everything. And, you know, why are you talking like this? Because you're being stupid. You're trying to explain. Who's it for? The guru offers it. So now if you want the deities to have, great. Put asans for them other than the guru's one for offering. So put it nice for them to eat, but put the guru's one so he can offer it. That's the point you have to do. You want to expand on the deity worship, fine, but don't take what's already the guru's and then say that that's now Radha and Krishna's because you're Rasik. Does that make sense? So it's a science. And you can see as if it's understood in the moods, then the natural spontaneity comes, then the natural moods come. But that's why you keep it simple, because the philosophy behind it is very sophisticated. So when we don't know the philosophy and we just make the technical things there, or we say, oh, we're just simplifying, but we don't know the philosophy, so therefore we cut out parts that are important, you know, put emphasis where it's not necessarily and avoid things that are, then that's why we approach the acharyas. We wouldn't know how to go through this. Smartas don't know. They don't make it up. They follow whatever's in their poverty. And so then here the acharyas show us how to do this Vedic thing, because you have to respect the forefathers, the demigods, the general living entities, all those different personalities. You're doing these things, but how to do it in a Krishna conscious way that it is supportive of pure devotional service. Right? So then it's pointed out, then this is then how you're doing the, you know, in this case, the sattvika vridhi shraddha, you know, how you're offering, you're respecting like that. So that's then after this, right? And do we have any questions on this? Is this clear or? Yeah. Okay. Then, according to one's capacity, one should first offer gifts such as cloth and rice to Vaishnavas and the Brahmins without hesitation, while meditating on the Lord and doing so only for his pleasure, right? Because they're Krishna's devotees and they've come for this program. You know, either they've come to take part, give blessings, or they're performing technical points within this, that you're doing all this, and it says without hesitation. Right. And one, according to one's capacity, you are wealthy, then you offer nicely. You don't have so much money, you know, something within, because it says cloth. It can be, you know, a gumsha, you know, or just a dhoti, or, you know, something simple like that. Or sometimes you just get a handkerchief, you know, I've seen ones like that. You know, you get a coconut and a handkerchief and 10 rupees, you know, so. Like that. So the point is within your capacity, and it's also according to what is the person is there. But don't be cheap just because, okay, they're simple people, but you give nice, not more than what's going to throw them off, that they, you know, get distracted. But at the same time, it shouldn't be that, oh, they're, you know, just villagers, so give them 10 rupees. No, it means nicely, especially nowadays, at least give them 100 rupees. You know, they're more qualified, you give them 1,000 rupees. The more qualified, it just keeps going up like that. One should then perform Vasudhara, page 361, by putting 5 or 7 dots of ghee on the wall. Then in the same place, one should worship Mahabhagavat Chediraj with Mahaprasada, flowers, water, etc. Okay, so these are things that are mentioned. So Vasudhara 361. See, what's that? 361. Page 361. We have the appendix 4. It's diagrams of the mudras used in worship. Okay, so that means it's moved. It's in a different place. Okay, so maybe it's before that. Dikshna Sankarna Vedya Vidyarumba and Vama Devi Ganam, Appendix 2, Bhagavatana, Chedi Raj from the pot. Oh, Vasudhara, okay, Chedi Raj, what's before that? Sattvika Vridhi Shraddha, or that's got Stapana, Sankalpa. Okay, so maybe we'll get to these when we go to the end. Yeah, we'll just go through it like this. So in other words, there's other preliminary activities where you're worshiping the Lord's devotees and that. So then Vasudeva Archanam, prayers establishing the supreme position of the Lord.
Hare Krishna,
right?
Maharaj.
Yes.
These offerings to the Vaishnavas and Brahmins, what you're giving, this is at the very beginning. This is different from what you give as dana and dakshina later.
No, this is done after performing the Adivas, because generally the Adivas is done the night before, right? So since that's finishing, then you're going to offer gifts to the Vaishnavas and Brahmins at that time.
Okay.
Right. So whenever you have some ceremony and people there, then there's always some kind of, you know, offering and all that is done.
Okay,
like
it.
That. So depending on what it is, if it's in the morning and you're just going through one right after another, then if you're doing this whole line of them in the morning, you're going to do, then you do at the end of that. But if you're doing something the night before, then you give something there. Then you're doing all these in the morning, then you do give it at this time. And then, you know, you're going to have the main ceremony later, then you're going to give it that time. You know, and so if you're having so many, then it's a smaller offering. Smaller something, like that. And then, you know, for the main one, then it'll be something bigger. You know, or if you're doing it all as one ceremony, then you'll give them a full dakshin at the end of that. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I mean, that's generally how we would put the things together. But you can also do something in between. But then the problem is, especially if they're doing where they put it, where they keep it. Natural thing is, so you've given something like that, it's the end, all that, then they'll all go, or just taking prasad. And then, you know, going and then like that. So it's natural. Whenever there's an end to something, then there's always going to be that dakshin and distribution of prasad.
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah. Okay. Ah. Krishna conscious Prabhu has arrived. Okay. Vasudeva Archana. On the day of the wedding, that devotee of Govinda, who has accepted Pancha Samskara initiation from a bona fide guru, no matter which varna he is from, should take his bath in the morning, perform his standard daily duties, such as Sandhya Vandanam, etc., and in a decorated mandapa, or temple of Vishnu, should sit on Kusa Asan, perform Achman and Mangalacharan, you know, page 62. So again, we saw that Mangalacharan is there. So there's, you're putting that Mangalacharan, you're beginning at the, before you start the whole thing, you know, like that. And then, or you're doing, you know, and then, or you're doing that setting up, then doing a ceremony. Or if that's been done all the day before, then, I mean, like that, now you're saying the Mangalacharan here. In other words, the Mangalacharan is said in the beginning of, you know, doing some major activity. So then here, then that Mangalacharan is being done, even though it's been done, you saw the day before and setting everything up. And then, you know, you have the evening when you're doing, since it's been done on that day, it's done. And then you have the Adivas, but now it's the next day. So basically the beginning of each day, you would perform this aspect. So here it's also mentioned that devotee who's accepted Pancha Samskara, bona fide guru, no matter what the varna, right? Because once you're there, then all these things apply that you're doing. He's second initiated, so therefore he can worship the deity. He does his achman, he comes, and then all these different aspects are performed. He should establish a pot, gatstapana, page 351, in a beautiful mandala, and put a copper plate on top. On the plate, he should place the shaligram and then proceed to worship the shaligram with the Purushashukta prayers, page 64. At a wedding or any other function, Lord Narayana or his shaligram form should always be worshipped. So this means is that if the deities are there, you're going to bring the deities, you're going to bring them out and they'll be worshipped. But otherwise, then here, then the technical points, if not, then you're going to do everything, establish the pot. And then the copper plate, because you have the pot, you know, it's got the water in it and everything. you have the leaves, the mango leaves, then at that point you put a plate, right? And on that plate, then you can put the deity. It means the shaligram. If deities are coming, you put them in a nice place like that. Or if it's like you're going to do all these preliminaries before and the deities will come later, then you're putting shaligram worship like this. And then that ghat will be kept, you know, where the altar is when the deities come. And if not, then this is the main deity for worship of, for the seeing the ceremony and, you know, all these things being done for the ceremony. Okay. It is an offense to devotional service and the holy name to worship Ganesh and other demigods, such as the Panchadeva, Surya, and the other planetary deities, right? Ganesh is the Panchadevatas, you know, so that's going to be the Ganesh, Surya, Shiva, Durga, and Vishnu in there. But that form is, we're worshiping Vishnu as the original form, but the Panchopasana worshippers are worshiping him as the, you know, supreme mode of goodness element. So they don't actually understand his transcendental position. And the other planetary deities, Indra and the deities of the directions, Gauri and the Matrikas, instead the Vaishnavas are worship. The evidence for this is in Padma Purana, right? So he's going to, so just as we saw is that the worship of the forefathers, that's being replaced with the Satvik of Riddhi Shraddha. Then also then the worship of all these different personalities that are required in the, you know, the Vedic system, that they all need to be worshipped. So then those are being replaced, we see, by the Vaishnavas. So the Acharya is then giving the, you know, the evidence and the details of what's happening here. And so then we'll also see is that when you're doing these preliminaries, then they're there in root worship, but also in the yajna itself, then this point comes up where you're supposed to worship, you know, in the Vedic thing, you would be worshiping these persons in the Vedic yajna, but that's been replaced by the devotees and is giving the evidence here in Padma Purana, right? So it says, Lord Vishnu is the personification of transcendental goodness. He is an ocean of auspicious qualities. He is Narayana, the Param Brahma. He is the worshipable deity of the Brahmanas. He is the Lord of Lakshmi, the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Janardana, Vasudeva, Pundarikaksha, Govinda, Hari, and Achyuta. O best of men, he alone is worshipped by the qualified Brahmins. If someone worships other gods due to illusion, he becomes an atheist. So that's why you also don't want to worship these other, you know, how you say, demigods and that. Like sometimes it comes up, it becomes popular that by going to these outside, you know, astrologers and all that, they tell them to, oh, you have this problem, worship this demigod or that. Or they think, you know, as Krishna mentioned in the Gita, oh, I'll get quicker results this way. But as pointed out here by the Padma Purana, you can do this, but you run the risk of becoming an atheist. An atheist means someone who doesn't care about the Vedic literatures, doesn't care about God. You know, and hey, amazing. We see this going on. So that's why people don't do this. You know, and we're not involved in doing these things for others. Right? Does that make sense? Because the point is why would the devotee worship, you know, Ganesh or that here? Because the point is they can say is, oh, but it's according, he's the devotee. But the point is you just worship the Lord. You know, what is the replacement for the Ganesh? Yeah, do that. It means he's giving this Vasudevarchana. Prayer is establishing the Supreme Person of the world. Lord, you use that. You want to worship, use that. It's already given by the Acharya. It's authorized by the scriptures. Well, if you're doing something else, is that authorized? From where? Maybe some smartavidhi, but remember, smartas are atheists. You want to become a smarta? Go for it. You want to go develop love for Krishna? That's another process. Even sinful people can attain complete liberation just by remembering Krishna. The water from his lotus feet should be accepted. Remnants of his food are purifying. The Lord's prasadam is the means for attaining heaven and final liberation, especially for the Brahmanas. This prasadam should always be offered to the demigods through the sacrificial fire. Right? So in other words, even their offering, even that is supposed to be that they're offering the remnants of Vishnu to the demigods. This idea that you're just offering Bodha to the demigods. No, that's not the Vedic system. Vedic system is you've worshiped Vishnu, and that's going to the demigod. Does that make sense? He who offers the remnants of the Lord to his forefathers in the Shraddha ceremony receives infinite rewards. O Brahmanas, he who performs Shraddha but does not offer Vishnu Prasad to his forefathers condemns them to continuously eat stool and urine. So you can say, we can do whatever we want. And, it's here. It's what you get for, this is what they get to eat for dinner. Therefore, a Brahmin should always honor the Lord's remnants. But if he takes the remnants of the demigods, he becomes utterly condemned. And what does utterly condemned mean? We see is Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, all these persons, they were all doing very well. Good social status, good wealth, good power, influence, beauty, everything. What's condemned? Being an atheist. When he says he utterly, it doesn't mean he may become. He's saying utterly. And in the other, it doesn't say may become. He said he becomes an atheist. So we have to take these seriously, is that this ekayana, what makes it transcendental is that it's just about Vishnu. So therefore, we're, the Bhagavat, of the Vaishnava aspects, we're using the Bhagavat. So then we have the aspect of Achintabheda-Veda Tattva that brings us to the point of Braja Bhakti. Then of the Pancharatra, then we're taking, Narad Muni's point, like that, and then how the Acharyas have given us so that it becomes very focused on the Lord and not something that will distract us. Then when we're doing the Vedic, then it's Daiva Varnashram, it's Daiva Vedic, means it's, so it's as good as Pancharatra, and that is only in connection with Vishnu. So in that way, then there's no incongruity there, and that whole mood of that Bhagavat aspect, that spontaneity works very nicely because we've already cleared out anything that's not to do with Krishna and anything that can create or cultivate that mood of majesty as a goal, right? We may be situated in the element of using majesty because we don't have that relationship with Krishna based on prema. But it doesn't mean that we have to do the technical points of that majesty worship. We only do the natural worship that would be used by those on the path of spontaneous devotional service, but our mentality is not spontaneous. So that's doing. So this idea that that means Prabhupada and the Acharyas have already given us the path of spontaneous devotional service. The problem is we're not spontaneous. So those who foolishly think that, you have to follow a different set of rules and different activities to attain that path of spontaneity, and what we've been given, this is just rules and regulations. So this is Vaidhi, this is like that. That this is the mentality of the Sahajiyas. So the other one we mentioned before is for the atheists, the smartas. Then this kind of thing is from the Sahajiyas. So that's the thing, is we have to be very careful of the influence of these, because where do they come from? Because devotees go out and they talk to these Sahajiyas and try to get pointers from them and all that. They don't know how to catch a fish and not get wet. They can't go to the smartest and find out some technical detail. They have to ask them some philosophy. No, why are you asking your philosophy? You go to the Sahajiya and he plays drum nice. How do you play drum? And he shows you te de ke ta. Okay, get that from him. But don't ask him the philosophy. He's a Sahajiya. What does he know? So that's the same way. These smartas or others, they know some technical things like, why the lamp's like that, how you hold the lamp and stuff like that so it doesn't fall over and stuff. Yeah, and that you do. And so that is there, but you don't ask their philosophy. That's the problem. We think that if someone's expert in something, he's expert in everything. No, it's the area that he's good at. So we know spiritual. That's where we're good. We may not know all the technical points of of the mechanics of so many religious elements. We can ask those who do know that, but we're only asking the mechanics. We're not asking them philosophy. You know, I've seen that. They brought in some guy to show some technical points on economics and administration, a Carmi guy, you know, full on long hair, ponytail, you know, smoking dope, skipping rope, you know, the whole thing. But he's the top in his field in that area. They bring him in and that, you know, gives a presentation to GBC and this and that. From that presentation, that's where Hari Nam was given up by most zones, because they said when you're out on the street and you're begging on the street or panhandling, that's the lowest level of economics. And there's six levels. So the top level is then when people, what do you call it? You know, they give their land, and when they die in their will, they will you their land and properties and money and all that. So then everybody, of course, out of prestige, wants to be the top. So then you stop the out on the street, you know, Sankirtan as devotees and Hari Nam and things like that, because, oh, it's low class. People think badly about it. Who thinks badly about you? Who's out on the street anyway? You know, are some corporate guy on the street? Is the government official on the street? Is the PhD professor out on the street? Hardly, no. Who's on the street? General populace. They don't have a problem. So that's the problem. They bring in these things and all that, and then he shows this, and then it goes off like that. And so that's the problem. But after that, they also, some of them, because, you know, he was such a good presentator and very, and you know, had a very good grasp of that, then they start asking him, you know, personal questions in their life, how to apply things. And what is he going to tell them? Mundane stuff. You know? Does that make sense? That's the problem. You have to know who's good at what, and don't go beyond that. So when you're working in these areas and technical areas, and there's something that is not explained here and you don't know where, you can go to people that deal in these fields, and they can tell you either where it is and, you know, where it's done, what's the tradition and all that. But don't ask them the philosophy. You know, you go back as far as mechanics go. In other words, all the time questions, just like the yajna spoons we have. Our spoon is split in half, the small spoon, right? And the big one, you know, then has that kind of, you know, like that, the very big one with the, you know, the, at the end. So then why is split in half? So I remember when Sri Vaishnav Brahman, the one who did the installation in Hyderabad that Prabhupada had invited and all that. So then he's there and he said, you know, why does it split? And he says, because it's the two nostrils of Varahadev, because he's the Lord of sacrifice. That's the Samaveda one. So we're using that. If you're using other Vedas, they don't split it like that. And then that one, that curve like that, that's Varaha's lip. You know, like that. So both things are connected with Varaha. Like that. So that's the thing. And then what do they do? Then one sun and one's moon. Right, because the nostrils, one sun, one's moon, right? And so then like that. So you have the different things that you go, you know, mechanics they can explain. But philosophy, you don't get the philosophy from them. So he's explaining the mechanics of what this is. But I'm not asking him about what's the absolute truth and everything. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so then continuing here. If a Brahman knowingly partakes of the prasad of Lord Shiva or any other deva, even once, he certainly becomes a chandala and burns in the fires of hell for many thousands of millions of years. Okay. You know, best to avoid this one, right? You know, and then the thing is, oh, yes, but no, but, you know, we're from the West. We took birth in the Western families. Therefore, it's so glorious. We should know. You're born there. Why? Because you took the prasad of Shiva and other demigod knowingly. Right? As a Brahmana. Oh, best of the twice born, the remnants of Lord Shiva and other demigods, Rakshasas, Yakshas, or Pisachas, are no different from meat and wine. Therefore, the Brahmin should not honor the remnants of the demigods. So it's not that, oh, well, you know, we don't want to be fanatic. No, you just don't. Therefore, divert your attention from other demigods, and as long as you live, untiringly engage in the worship of Lord Vishnu, who is eternal, O elevated Dvija. One should worship Purushottama by the most beautiful mantra according to regulations, and one should engage untiringly in devotional service for his pleasure. In the worship of his associates, one should avoid demigods, right? So since you have to worship the Lord and his associates, you avoid the demigods. Because they'll worship Vishnu and then all the demigods and this and that. That's why you see on Hindu's altar, everybody's there. Because that's what it is. It's the Lord and the associates. But they're not, no, it's the devotees. The devotee interested in pure devotion to the Lord and initiated with Vaishnava mantra should never worship Ganesh and the other devatas. Wherever the rituals prescribe worship of Ganesh and the devatas, the Vaishnava should instead worship the pure devotees of Lord Vishnu. Right? So that's where we worship Guru and the Parampara. Thus, instead of worshiping Ganesh to remove material obstacles, the devotee should worship Vishwakshena and the four Kumaras to remove obstacles on the spiritual path. Whereas the materialist will worship the Navagrahas, the nine demigods presiding over the nine planets, the devotee will worship Kavyamuni and the other Navayogendras, right? So we're seeing is, what is that worship? So this actually, this Vasudeva Archana is how you're worshiping the Lord through all these associates and replacing all the demigods. And you'll see this will come up in the yajna. So that's why the yajna goes through all these things, because it's required that you can't just worship the Lord and not worship the associates. That's neophyte. It's not accepted by the Lord. Unless you, if you worship him as Bhagavan, he has to be with associates. Right? If you just worship Paramatma, okay, he's on his own. But then you either move forward to Bhagavan or you move back to Brahman. Right? Whereas the fruit of workers worship the deities of the directions, Dikpalas, the devotee should worship Brahma, the great devotee Sukadev, Sadashiva, Garuda, Narada, Kapila, Bali, the great Bhishma, Prahlada, Hanuman, Ambarisha, the great Yama, Swayambhuva Mana, the great Vaishnav Vyas and other Vaishnavs famous throughout the ages, or other great Vaishnavs famous throughout the ages, right? So this is the Mahajanas that have just been, are being worshipped here. Like, so Brahma is up, Bali is down. So you get all the, this way and up and down. That's why you see when they stand with the rice and they're throwing it, that's, you're going in all the directions around the fire. So you're worshipping the Mahajanas. And then when they throw up, that's Brahma, and then they throw down in the fire, that's Bali Maharaj. You know, so the 8 directions up, down. One should always worship Lord Hari and never worship demigods. O great sages, whenever others worship the Matriganas, right, means the different forms of Durga and all her expansions, the Vaishnavas instead worship Bhagavati Purnamasi, Padma, Antarangika, Ganga, Yamuna, Chandravali, Gayatri, Tulasi, Saraswati, Prithivi, Vaishnavi, Go, Jashoda, Devahuti, Devaki, Rohini, Sita, Draupadi, Kunti, Rukmini, and the other 8 queens of the Lord. Right? So then these are the Matriganas that are worshipped.
Maharaj?
Huh, yes.
We are over time.
Oh, we are. Okay. So in other words, you know, they're saying about worshiping the ladies and all that. It's going on right here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.